I believed that they were the luckiest people in the world. Like people who got to train big cats, there was no one luckier, and that's what I wanted to do with my life.
And I'm supposed to talk to them and get them engaged and hear my voice and become familiar with me. And that's part of our process. What do you say? You know, hi, hi, Sam. Hi, bird. Good boy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. This is Jessica Hankin, and this week is going to be a little bit different because my partner, Laura Wexler, is not here with me. I am instead in my attic in a makeshift studio constructed by my wonderful husband, who is in radio, Aaron Hankin. So I have various blankets and pillows around me, and we are committed to getting new content out on our podcast, even during a pandemic. That's how much we love doing this. So, for the next few weeks, you might just be hearing my voice until things can get back to an appropriate social distancing scenario. So, before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, which has been a longtime supporter of the Stoop podcast. They are an independent, non-sectarian school located right outside the city. This week on the podcast, our theme is Wild Kingdom. We have two stories of folks who have passionate devotion to wild animals. Our first storyteller is actually a friend of mine from Annapolis, Maryland. She and I grew up together and have been friends for over 30 years. And I had known that she had experienced the story that you're about to hear when she experienced it back in the about 25 years ago. And I watched the documentary on Netflix that everyone has been watching, which is, of course, Tiger King, which will forever be associated with the pandemic. And I was like, holy cow, one of the, if you've seen the documentary, then you'll know that one of the folks in the documentary is very much featured in Katrina's story. So it was really interesting when I made that connection for myself and thought, like, oh, I gotta get her to tell her experience. So even if you haven't seen Tiger King, the story I think will resonate with you. So please give a listen to Katrina Knutson.
I have intentionally not watched Tiger King. And the main reason is because when I was 25, back in 1999, I almost became a professional tiger trainer. I had always wanted to work with animals. I loved animals. I'd worked with tigers at the zoo. And I believed that they were the luckiest people in the world. Like people who got to train big cats, there was no one luckier. And that's what I wanted to do with my life. So I did some online research back then. I think I used Netscape, and I found this website for this company called Tigers, which was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I reached out to them. I sent them my resume, and they said they would love to take me on as an apprentice. So we made an appointment or an arrangement for me to come down there for 4th of July weekend, where I was going to interview everybody, meet everybody, find out how the job was going to work. And then if all went well, I was going to come back, spend a couple months taking care of their baby tigers. And then if that went well, then I was going to apprentice with them. So I drove down there on a holiday weekend. Traffic was horrible. And I developed a UTI on the way down there. So I don't even get there until after midnight on the Friday of this holiday weekend. And so when I finally get to where I'm going, there's this long dirt road that you drive down, and then the end of the dirt road is this compound. And I'd seen pictures online. They talked about there's like a pool and all this cool stuff in the compound. And it's this large building, and the only way in and out is through the building. And the training space is in the building. The tigers live in this building, and so do most of the people. So there's like an apartment upstairs and a couple bedrooms downstairs, a communal kitchen, a communal bathroom. And then you walk through the building. And then the rest of the compound is just surrounded by a chain link fence. And then sprinkled in there is like a couple of barns, a couple of like beat up old RVs. And like, I think there was like an above ground swimming pool with no water in it and like a corral or something. So it's looking a little different already from the pictures. Like reality expectations, not quite the same. So I meet a couple of the other people while I'm waiting for Bhagavan, who runs the place, and Kira, his assistant, to come back from what they're doing. And the two people I meet are kind of weirdos. Like one guy is he doesn't talk at all. He's like the reptile guy. And then the elephant guy is this like belligerent old carny with like not a lot of teeth. And so when Bhagavan and Kira come back, they're bringing with them this woman, Sarah, who would be my roommate. And I was like, oh, thank God, they seem like normal. So Sarah's like, well, this is the RV where I stay. You're going to stay with me. I'll see you later. And I go in with Bhagavan and Kira and sit down for the interview. And they're like, we're so glad you came down. We just wanted you to come for the weekend to get a feel for the place. Because the last girl who we hired only lasted a week. And I was like, oh, like what happened? And they were like, I don't know. She said something about the bugs. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, I don't know. Just, I guess some people don't, but like bugs. And I was kind of like, wow, she should be braver or whatever. And then I do notice as I'm chatting with them, like there are a couple bugs on the walls, like palmetto bugs and like a roach or two, like crawling around, lights on, very bold. In fact, like one palmetto bug, like lazily flies all the way across the room and like lands on Kira's arm. And I was like, okay, that's all right. I get that that could be an issue. And so they're chatting. I notice this picture on the wall, and it's like a guy, young, like he looks like Doug Henning kind of, and he's walking a tiger on a chain. It's probably from the late 70s, early 80s. And they see me looking at it, and Bhagavan says, oh yeah, that, by the way, that's me. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. And then he kind of says, and like, yeah, and before that I was a neurosurgeon, so blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking like, well, this picture is like 20 years old. You're like 40. He looks like he's in his 40s. You know, he's like a good looking white guy in his 40s. And Bhagavan, no last name. Like, I think he's probably like selected this name for himself. And I'm trying to do the math of like, how is he should be a very old man. Like, how has he done these things? And I can't figure it out. But he seems nice. And then Kira, his assistant, is talking to me, explaining some of the expectations of the job. And she says, oh, well, part of it is nannying, but that's where I got my start because Bhagavan and his wife had these two kids. And then I also did this. And so she's like very encouraging, like, I could see you being where I am, you know, before long. And I was like, ooh, great. You know, I'm an ambitious person. And then I noticed she has this huge engagement ring on, and she's like, oh yes, and Bhagavan and I are engaged. And I, you know, come to find out Bhagavan's wife, the mother of his children, had died like less than a year before. And he and Kira are very comfortable and very engaged. So questions are being raised because this isn't really like what I had pictured anything being like at this point. They say goodnight. I go back to the trailer where I'm going to stay with Sarah, and I go in there and I'm uncomfortable from the UTI. And I was like, is there a bathroom in here? And she's like, no, like none of them are hooked up. So the only running water and toilets and stuff are in the training room, that building. But like, I don't really like to go in there if I can help it. So at night and stuff, I'll just like pee outside or whatever. And I was like, oh, why don't you want to go in there? And she's like, oh, like the roaches are really bad. And I was like, well, like how bad? Like people keep talking about this. And she's like, oh yeah, like they're in between the plates in the kitchen. And like, when you take a shower, like roaches will fall on your face. And I'm like, wow, that is something I did not expect. Like when they tell you about like tiger training, they don't tell you about the roaches. Like they don't tell you how many roaches there are in the animal training world. Because it was a lot. So she says, oh, by the way, I'm going to keep the light on tonight if that's okay. I have a compulsive fear of the dark, so I always sleep with the light on. And I'm kind of like, okay, that's unexpected. And there are a lot of prescription bottles around, like a lot, like not just like even three or four, but like a dozen. And I'm kind of like, well, all right, like I guess. And I'm wondering, like, how is this all working? Because I know there's no health insurance available in this job. Like they don't offer health insurance, and it's only $400 a month. And then she sort of mentions in passing how excited she is to get her breast implants because everybody gets them there. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, like Bhagavan is really good friends with this plastic surgeon, so like all the women, we all just get breast implants. And I was like, well, why do you want them or like need them? And she's like, oh, it's good for business, and we do stage shows. Like Kira does this sexy snake dance with our python, and she wears like a bikini. And again, expectations versus reality. Like, I didn't think that would be part of training for, I just pictured something really different. So I go outside to pee. I'm ready for bed. I'm exhausted. And everything here is just off a little bit. But I know that this is my dream and I don't want to miss out, even just for the weekend, the opportunity to like cuddle baby tigers. And I just think like, yeah, it's not going to be easy. You toughen up, but you can get used to anything. And so I squat down on like the sandy spot I find to pee. And I'm already uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden I realize my feet and legs are on fire. And I look down and I've squatted in a fire ant mound. And they are crawling up my legs and aggressively biting me. And I think that's the moment where I was like, fuck this. This is not where I want to be right now. And I didn't want to give up, but I also knew that I was not feeling well. I'd had a 12-hour drive. I was exhausted. It was like 3 a.m. that at the very least I needed to stay in a hotel for the night, and I was going to come back in the morning fresh and ready to cuddle those baby tigers. So I tell Sarah I'm leaving, but I'm coming back in the morning, and I can tell she doesn't believe me because it's the middle of the night and I'm like, look, I'm sick. I got this UTI. I just need a hot bath and whatever. And so she's like, okay. So as a sign of good faith, I leave behind like my favorite Jawbreaker t-shirt and stuff. I grab my bags. The only way out of this place is through this training building. Again, it's dark. Everybody's asleep. I walk through and literally can see dark moving things of just all the roaches that are crawling all over everything. And I like scuttle through. I get in my car. Because it's a holiday weekend, I drive for 2 hours before I find the last room in some crappy old hotel, mirror on the ceiling. I sleep for a couple hours. I wake up in the morning and I realize, like, I don't think I want to go back there. Like, there was no amount of baby tiger cuddling or dream pursuing that made it worth it to me to want to go back there. Like, even just for the weekend. Like, I just knew this is not for me. Like, I know this is my dream, but if this is what I have to do to get there, I'm not doing it. So I called a friend and I had her tell them that I had had a diabetic episode and was in the hospital, which is terrible because I do not have diabetes, but my brother does. And so in my mind, that is how I justify this stupid lie. And I went home and I don't think I ever spoke to them again.
All right. So that was Katrina's fun story about tigers and cockroaches. And just as an interesting factoid, Katrina is actually a published author of young adult fiction. So she goes by the pen name Cat Shepherd, and she has two series under her belt, Babysitting Nightmares and The Gemini Mysteries. They're both excellent reads. So give them a read if you've got any young adults at home. So before we get started on our next storyteller for this episode, I do want to thank Baltimore Magazine, which chronicles and celebrates this complicated, wonderful town of Baltimore. Pick up your copy on newsstands now or visit baltimoremagazine.com. They have their own podcast, which is Local Flavor Live. So this next story is actually been on the podcast once before, about 3 years ago. It is from Rick Wilson, and it's... it was told at our creature feature show at the Senator in a time when we could all congregate in crowds upwards of 700 people. So please give a listen to Rick's story as it very much ties into Katrina's.
So I was one of those kids that grew up with a lot of pets. Our parents allowed us to have mice and birds and lizards, and we would go out and hunt frogs and things like that, but I never really thought about doing it as a career. And when I came of age and started going to school, I was in school and I was heading in a career path to become a funeral director, only ending up working in transportation. And that's kind of how life goes at that time. And I've been working on the railroad for about 40 years now. And so in the late 80s, I was looking for more and was looking for something to do. I was in a relationship, I was steady, everything was just kind of rolling and you're just kind of there. And my partner told me to get a life. So I tried Pets on Wheels. Well, that didn't really work out very well. That's a long story. It's another Stoop story. And I then saw an ad in the paper about volunteers at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore. And was kind of like, wow, I never really thought about this before. So I applied and became a volunteer in the Animal Embassy. And that is the department in which you saw here tonight, which houses all of the animals that go out in educational outreach and conservation programs. And at the time that I started, it was a really small program. And we had things like rabbits and pigeons and just small little furry things. And I started volunteering there and learning how to take care of these animals and learning how to handle them and present them in public. Well, this happened. I did this for about 8 years. And during those 8 years, I really threw myself into something that I really loved. And at the same time I was doing this, I was also going into a mid-management position that kind of tracked at my job on the railroad and was kind of balancing these two things together. Well, eventually, after about 8 years, a position opened up, a weekend keeper position in the Animal Embassy. And the position was offered to me. Well, at that point, I was already working within going into a management structure, and I was hating it. And so I decided to change positions in my company, take a job that paid less money so that I could work 7 days a week, but doing something that I really loved doing and believed in. And I became a zookeeper at 40. It changed my world. It changed my life. And during that time, and I got to work with lots of different things, and I started learning how to handle animals more. I started doing more public programs. I don't know if anybody here is familiar with the TV show Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. So those that do, well, Jim Fowler, the guy that wrestles the animals in that show, I actually got to spend 3 days traveling through the inner city schools doing programs with him. As he talked, I handled animals that were part of our embassy collection. And this went on for many years. And as my bosses and I grew in the job, they started to challenge me more. So one year, it was about late 1990s, my boss approached me and said, "We have a young toucan coming in. And he's going to be 6 weeks old, and he's coming into quarantine, and we want you to help be part of the team to help train him and develop him as an animal ambassador." And in doing that, it's what we do is they come into quarantine, and any animal that comes into the zoo goes into quarantine for 30 days, and that's to assess their health. But we go in as well as handlers and trainers to work with them and help develop them to create a trust account with them is what we call it. So I was Sam's weekend person to go in, sit with him, have him sit on my hand, and just develop him as an animal ambassador. Because not only do we work with him, but it's the other keepers that work with him, as well as the educators that work with him as well. So it's developing a well-rounded ambassador. So she told me what to do, and it was basically to take this cup of food, which is just seed and mashed fruit, and go in and sit with him, and just hand feed him and talk to him. And eventually he'll sit on your hand. So the first day I go up there, and he's in his cage, and he's only about that big. And when toucans are little babies, they only have beaks about that big. And the beak grows as they grow. So I go in, and he's just hopping all around. They're a little kind of flighty. And I go in, and I sit down. I scoop up the food, and I just hold it out. And he flies down, and he just starts to eat it out of my hand. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. And I'm supposed to talk to them and get them engaged and hear my voice and to become familiar with me. And that's part of our process. And so what do you say? You know, hi. Hi, Sam. Hi, bird. Good boy. That was about it, you know. And I had to be there for about 30 minutes the first day. So I quickly kind of ran out of things to say. So I just kept working with him and feeding him. So the next time I went in the next day, we had some newspapers sitting in the area that he was housed. So I started reading the news and would just sit there and hand feed him. And he'd come down and I would just read whatever topical news of the day. And I believe Clinton was in office at the time. So I would read him the daily news reports of the Clinton administration. And then as the weeks went on, I finally then started, like, you know, Brad Pitt was the sexiest guy alive. the young princess in England, Diana's sons were becoming young men. Sam heard all of this as I sat there and just fed him and read to him the articles out of these magazines and papers. And eventually Sam then started to step up and sit on my hand. And after those 30 days, he then came out and joined the population of the Animal Embassy. And at that time, you know, Sam, for some reason, bonded with me because I was not the only keeper working with him. But I don't know what I did. Sam was all about me. And whenever I was in his proximity and other keepers were working with him, Sam would certainly let them know by a little nip, often here or here or here, that... You know, he wanted to be with me, and he was so bonded with me, and he trusted me so much that whenever we were doing health physicals and things like that, I always worked with Sam because I could touch his beak, I could touch his feet, I could touch his back, I could touch his body. So Sam and I then started working together. We started doing programs together. We started going out together. One of my early appearances on one of the media programs, one of the local news shows, I had Sam with me, and I'm sitting there. They have the seats that are located just right on set, and I have Sam in the kennel, and I'm sitting there, and he starts, like, looking. He can see me from the kennel, and he wants out. He wants to be with me, and all of a sudden, the newscasters are talking about some tragic event that's going on in the world, and you hear this, he's starting to cronk, and he wants out. He wants to be with me, and I'm just sitting there like, oh, crap. What do I do? So I pulled him out of the kennel, and I wasn't sure what he was going to do because we were still fairly new at this together, and I just held him close to me, and I put my hand on his back, and he started to purr. And when toucans purr, it's kind of like a... You know, and they just do this low rumbling purr, and I just sat there with my hand right there, and then he sat quietly until I was ready to go on with my segment. So that was a little learning curve. I was like, okay, so I need to make sure that he doesn't see me. Another event that I worked, we do a congressional event in Washington every year with the World Wildlife Fund and with animal rights lobbyists and with congresspeople and things such as that. And I was there with Sam, and I'm standing there talking to someone from Congress, and Sam is on my hand. And when he's usually away from my body, he's very active, and he'll call, and he'll make all kinds of noise. So I'm talking to someone, and the next thing I know, I look over, and Sam's got a lime in his mouth. And I'm like, oh. So apparently he had jammed his beak down in someone's glass and took the fruit out of their cocktail. So I just snatched it out of his beak and just shoved it in my pocket and kept on talking to the man that I was talking to. Well, I look again, he has a mini empanada in his beak at that time too. So again, I take it out, shove it in my pocket, and I go on to explain to the gentleman how toucans' beaks are long so that they can access pieces of fruit that may be out of their reach. So it was a really good segue, and it really saved me. And so at this point, and this went on for several years, we worked together. Sam was just wonderful to work with. We had such a great bond. And then New York City. You know, oftentimes we get a chance to go to New York City. We have one of the best traveling collections on the East Coast that travels throughout the state of Maryland. And we were invited to go to New York City for some talk shows. And this was over the course of a few years. We did the Martha Stewart show. Now, I wasn't the one on camera talking, but that was my hand that you saw on camera with the bird on it. That was me. And Martha Stewart, she was really awesome. She was really nice, and she's really tall. She's like 6 feet tall. We also did Larry King, which was also a really fun event. But one of the best events we did was the Maury Povich Christmas special. And he had all of these. Jack Hanna was there with his animals. There was another zoo that was there. So we were all there, this audience full of families and children having a wonderful time. And Maury Povich had the best green room out of all of them. He fed you from some deli, and it was absolutely amazing, and just packed our van full of food for our drive back to Baltimore. It was so much fun. And Sam and I then we just kept working and doing different events together. And as time went on, then Sam started to get older. And you know, when our ambassadors get older, we do put them into semi-retirement. And Sam was not traveling as much anymore, but we would still do things together on grounds. And at that time then, as he was retiring and spending more time and just getting sunshine, I had was asked by my supervisor to take on another task. And she had called me and I had just moved into a new apartment. And she said, how would you like to have 2 6-week-old ravens come and live with you? And you bring them to work during the day, and you take them home with you at night, but they will live with you for a month. Well, I jumped at the opportunity. Who wouldn't like to have 2 young ravens in their house? And as most of you know, and there are animal ambassadors, Rise and Conquer, but many of you may know them as Rise and Conquer, the Ravens mascots. But that is a whole other story that is still evolving because ravens are incredibly intelligent animals. And Sam, as our time went on together and he started to retire, we started spending a little less time together, more time together just sitting with him in his flight yard, just hanging out. And I remember my last day with Sam. I was working. I was outside. I had about 30 minutes free. And so I just went into his flight yard, picked him up, and I just sat down on the ground with him and just holding him and, you know, scratching his neck and under his wings and things like that and just letting him purr and just sat there and hung out. And then just put him back and just went home. So it was a few days later that I got a call and that Sam had passed away of natural causes. And, you know, it was hard. You know, of course it was sad, but it wasn't sad like losing my cat. It was more sad like losing a really treasured colleague. And, you know, he was such an amazing ambassador for his country, for the Maryland Zoo, and for his species. And it was one of these, he was one of these animals that chose me. You know, he chose me to bond with. And as a zookeeper, you know, we work with a lot of animals. And in my department, I work with about 50 animals. But I have a working relationship with them, but I may not necessarily have a bond. So it's really special when you get that one or that two that really truly form that very special connection with you. And it's just, you know, it's magic. You know, there's nothing like it in the world. And right now I am developing that relationship, and that is with our ravens. And I've been with them for 9 years. And that will be another story to tell. It's just an incredible feeling. And I thank you.
The lady said to the tiger as he stood behind some doors, I'm sick of this job. I don't know what we're waiting here for.
All right, great. So that was Rick, who still to this day works for the Baltimore Zoo and continues his passionate work with animals. That sounds wrong. You know what I mean? He's passionate about animals. Anyway, we want to thank you for listening, and we're going to be putting out new content in the upcoming weeks, even though there is a global pandemic occurring. And given that there's a global pandemic occurring, this last sponsor of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast is definitely doing business gangbusters, and that's The Wine Source, which is located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. So please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Find out more about our live shows, which we will have again. Not sure when, but we will. And workshops at stoopstorytelling.com. Special thank you to producer Maureen Harvey for her patience and good care. Until next week, stay safe, stay well. We miss you.